1, 2, 3, come!
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out. Because I can't stop ranking Beatles, yeah.
Ranking Beatles.
Oh, that was better.
Why can't you see? 223.
Feeling pretty good about that so far.
That was good.
I'm going to keep working on that one. I feel like there's something to that one.
We'll revisit it a good few episodes from now when people have forgotten it.
Yeah.
And
well, it's on my mind because we watched the Elvis movie.
It was very weird.
Yeah, it was very strange.
Yeah.
He didn't look like Elvis, but then sometimes he really looked like Elvis. It was really strange.
Yeah.
It was an enjoyable 2.5 hours, though, whatever it was.
I was occupied.
You were reading, which is fine.
I was reading for part of it, and then I finished my book, and then I joined you in the movie, and I was like, this is weird.
Right.
But I was just like, eh.
Yeah,
it's occupying my brain for a Sunday evening. It's fine. Moving on.
This is not an Elvis podcast,
sorry,
though, friends.
Yeah.
Welcome to episode 108.
Yikes.
Of Ranking the Beatles. Hope you're all doing smashing. I think it's 108. I think I got that right.
I sure hope so. I mean, or else you're going to have to go back and patch in 109.
I know the ranking today. Hang on. I know the ranking is song number 108.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to podcast number
106.
It would not be the first time this dog and pony show has been held together with bubblegum and duct tape. But yeah, everybody, welcome to the show. It's so good to see you. The good news is this is indeed episode 108.
Oh, good.
We just happen to be also ranking song 108.
Whoa.
Which is why I kind of went, oh God, what's happening?
Whoa. Is this it's like a golden birthday? It's like a golden podcast?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think
108
so.
And 108. Yeah.
I don't know how that works.
I don't know either. I feel like we need to celebrate. Let's have some ice cream when we're done with this.
Yes. Okay. I love that plan. We will do that. But welcome to the show, everybody. It's good to see you. So we actually recorded this episode like a few weeks ago, a handful of weeks ago. This was like early August that we taped this conversation while we were in the midst of our break. And when we taped it, our guest this week had released a single and had another one coming out. That another single is now out now. So,
oh, good.
While I feel like we've already talked about one song, there's a second song actually as well that he's just released. And they're both pretty dang good jams, man. So, our guest this week is a Denver-based singer and songwriter. Music is described as a mix of Tame Impala and Elton John, with additional influence in the production and recording techniques of Brian Wilson and Paul McCartney. It's kind of got my name written all over it right now.
Yeah.
Got a brand new single out called About Love, and also a new one, an even newer one called Burnout Baby. Both of them absolute grooves, packed with late 70s vibe, kind of echoes like Back to the Egg era Wings, a very Arrow Through Me kind of groove, which, if you're into the good stuff, that is a groove.
You've sold me.
Yeah. You can check it out anywhere you stream or download music. Highly recommend it. Or on his website, which will be linked in the show notes as well. Friends, please welcome to the show, Julian Fulco Perrone.
Take
Julian, welcome to Ranking the Beatles, man. How are you today?
I'm really good, man. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it's been a lot of back and forth, but glad to finally be here.
Glad to have you. I think this is the most reschedules I've ever done on an episode because, like, I had something come up, then you had something come up, and it just went back and forth. So thank you for your flexibility.
I was, like, sick one time. Like, it was a whole thing.
It was a mess. Thank you for your flexibility. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, first, you know, I want to say, you know, congratulations on the new single. I know you have a new single out called About Love. Tell me a little bit about that. I'm picking up on, like, some real, like, Wings, you know, Back to the Egg kind of, like, Arrow Through Me-esque kind of grooves. Like, give us kind of the backstory on that.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, I mean, that's definitely where it comes from, is, like, that late 70s sort of era of funk and soul and, like, kind of disco-y. Like, I've got, like, at least some of the elements of the new music I'm working on. That song not as much, like, disco as some of the other ones I'm working on. But, yeah, I mean, you nailed it on the head with Arrow Through Me. That song is such a, like, such a random song on that album. It's, like, nothing really sounds like it in their whole discography, even, for Wings. It's just kind of this own little, like, funky thing, and very soulful. The horns, super great. So that's a big inspiration for it. And it was really cool, like, coming across that song, especially when you listen to that album, you're just kind of like, where did this come from? But yeah, I'm working on a lot of new stuff that's very late 70s, like I said, very funk and soul, disco influence, a lot of Bee Gees influence. I've got a lot of vintage keyboards that I record with. Here in my studio now, I've got like a Rhodes and the vintage 70s Crumar. It's like this Italian string machine that's featured on the song too. So I love to feature that those like classic instruments and put myself in the time period of one of those artists, you know, and try to make it, you know, it's really fun coming from the perspective of the analog days. And I shoot a lot of Super 8 too. Like a lot of my music videos are shot with film. So it's kind of fun to put myself in the past and think of like, how would I work if this was my flow and what I had at my disposal. So it's kind of a fun thing to play with.
And you're kind of a self-contained unit. Like you play all the instruments on the record. You make the videos yourself. You do the artwork, if I'm not mistaken too. Like
I do. Yeah. We do like all of our own photo shoots and things like that. Yeah. I work with some other musicians here and there. And I think on that song, I hired some horn players. It's always fun to work with that, but I wrote all the arrangements and everything, and it's kind of just, it's very exhausting at times. The one man band thing, but no, it's a lot of fun.
Is that
to come at it from all angles?
Is doing that by design for you, or just kind of like by default? Because you know that's something I've always wanted to do, is make a record doing everything myself, but I don't have the patience or the time to do it all.
You know, it's how I started with music. It's like I kind of had. My first instrument was guitar, and then it was kind of just something for me that like, this was going to take up a lot of my time. Like when I just knew it at an early age. And then kind of from there, I started teaching myself, you know, the natural progression is like, well, I got guitar, let me try a bass and like figure out how to do this. And, you know, of course, in the beginning, you're playing bass like a guitar. You're not playing it like a bass player, but you're picking up on some things. And then I started learning drums, and just kind of funny, keys are like what I think of as my main instrument now, my main like sort of tool. And it was the last thing I picked up, actually. It was like, and it came easier for me, I think, picking it up last than it did first, because it's like I had this sort of background and knowledge from guitar and like how music sort of works and how a song structure kind of goes. And then from picking up the drums, and the percussion, you know, you have that left right hand independency that kind of like comes with playing piano and playing keys. So it kind of like I took the two together, and that's kind of how it influenced my piano playing. A lot of like, I mean, honestly, a lot of Paul's piano playing, and like, but my big influences piano wise are like Freddie Mercury and Elton John and like Billy Joel, picking up on how they did it. That's how I taught myself how to play. It was just listening to their records and trying to figure out what's going on and how they're playing. Like, what are they doing in their left hand? Okay, now what are they doing in their right hand? And just like trying to build upon that. So it's kind of just something I put a lot of time into, and it just kind of lent itself to like, well, let's make records with all these components. And that's how I started. And it really just kind of came together that way.
Nice. That's fantastic. And would you say you kind of like, do you feel like you genre hop a little bit? Because like your earlier stuff I listened to doesn't sound kind of like the more like dance oriented, you know, 70s groove stuff that you're working on right now.
Yeah, I remember as a kid even having just this moment where I was like, I had this idea as a kid, like, I want to try to make a record of every genre. And I don't know where that came from of like, you know, I mean, every genre, that's so loose. It's like that is an endless amount of tasks there. But it was something I don't know where it came from even. I think I just like, I'm influenced by so many different things and I love to try to pick up on stuff. And a lot of it is like the disco-y and funk stuff that I'm working on now is kind of just because that's what I was listening to at the time. And it really started kind of peeking its way into my creative process. But no, you're totally right. I think there's a lot of genre hopping, and that's what I love about, I mean, kind of some of those artists from that time, like Bowie. I mean, he did a lot of, if you think about it, like you think of his records as like, oh, that's Bowie. But when you really think about what he's doing, like so many of it's genre hopping and like, oh, this is like totally different than, you know, this earlier record. And there's a lot of guys from that time period that's just kind of how I like to work. I mean, same with Paul's stuff too, like a lot of his solo work. He could have like this very acoustic and borderline cheesy ballad, which is amazing. But then next to it, he has like some funky stuff, and just like he's screaming harder than some of the metal heads at the time. And just, you know what I mean? It's just, so yeah, I think I've picked up that mindset along the way from a bunch of different areas. But you're right, like my first record is very much more like a Zappa sort of influence record, where it's like, it's a concept album, it's called Welcome to Dreamland, and it's kind of like the whole album takes place over the concept of one dream cycle, one sleep cycle. So the album kind of came to me, and it's just very, it's more like bedroom pop sort of like style, very like lo-fi indie. If you think of McCartney 2 even is a good way to like bring it back to the Paul side, where he's just like doing everything right there and it's kind of raw sounding. So that's where that one was. And then during the pandemic, my latest record came out last November, called In My Garden, was really just brought on by the pandemic. And we started picking up a lot of plants and picking up gardening, and like just kind of, you had not a lot to do. So, but it really got me in tune with, I mean, it sounds cheesy to say, like getting in tune with nature, but like sitting down, and there's something to be said about like the way the energy you could feel being surrounded. I mean, we had like 40 house plants at one point, just like around us.
Yeah.
We're just sitting here in the middle, you know, and it just, you feel something from that. So that record just kind of came from that time period. And I don't know if I would have made, it's much more of like a, like early 70s Beach Boys, very like stripped down acoustic sort of, a little bit of psychedelic nature. I have a sitar that I feature on that album. So
nice. Yeah,
it's very more psychedelic acoustic sort of vibe. And like we said, yeah, this new one I'm working on is like the going through mid 70s, early 80s era of like funk and disco.
So you
got like, yeah, disco. You got the Marvin Gaye, the Bee Gees, ABBA, all those sort of influences starting to creep in on me now. So
yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Fantastic. You know, you're talking about, I'm really intrigued by the thing you said about when you were a kid kind of thinking, you know, I'd want to make a record of every genre, because that's such a aware mindset to realize that there's all these kind of capabilities and, you know, places you can go musically. And that's one of the things I think, you know, for me, that's one of like the earliest things I picked up from the Beatles, is like, you can do anything musically. So, you know, that kind of leads me into my usual, you know, first question is like, where did the Beatles enter the picture for you? What's kind of your introduction to them?
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny that they came in much later into my musical journey than maybe it would come across with like where the impact they've had on my music. If you listen to any of my songs, you could probably find some sort of Beatles influence like after they kind of come into the picture. And that was, I think for me, like I was in a band before the pandemic, actually. It was kind of like more of a hard rock sort of effort, like a little more heavy. And that's when kind of I started getting to experience, like I was living with our guitar player. He was my roommate at the time. And he was the one kind of showing me the Beach Boys and showing me the Beatles and the 60s psychedelic period and that whole thing going on. I mean, the Doors and all these things that I'd kind of was familiar with, but I'd never really dipped my toes in. And then when I had listened to that, it really like sent me down this path of like, oh, what is going on over here? Like there's some real artistry. There's a lot of like, I mean, this was an era, remember, that they didn't have the tools we have today. They had to really be purposeful in the studio, or, you know, a lot of accidents created a lot of these records too. Mm-hmm. And that's just a really special space. And when I started to pick up on that, for me, it was just like so mind blowing and just really opened me up as a songwriter. And that's, I think, I mean, this was probably 2017, 2016. So, I mean, really
recent. So, it's really recent. Yeah, wow.
It really is. Yeah. That I really started getting into this period of like again, this is stuff I'm familiar with. And actually, it's funny. I mean, Julian, you talk about manifest destiny. I mean, my name's Julian. My mom named me after Julian Lennon.
So nice.
I mean, it's kind of a thing that I was like, okay, whatever. And then, of course, here I am. It's like they're one of my biggest influences. And we got the matching tattoos for
nice.
Hey Dude, you know, the first little couple notes there.
Oh, nice.
Aww, kind that's of, awesome. You know, the song. Yeah, it's like a song written for Julian Lennon. And that's kind of a cool little tie-in, and getting to see, we'll talk more about this later, I'm sure, but getting to see Paul McCartney live for the first time last year, seeing him play that song all tied in together, and it was just such a crazy experience for me. It's like this build-up of like getting exposed to them not that long ago, as we mentioned, and just like this culmination of like, okay, seeing everything come full circle for me. And like, because it may not have been a long time in years, but the amount of like, you know, that I've dove into their history and learned about their music, I mean, it's gone way slower in my head.
Yeah.
So.
So before that, what were you into? Like, what was kind of what's the foundation for you musically?
It's funny. Maybe this kind of ties into the multi-genre thing, but it's like, I was listening to, I was much more of a metalhead growing up and like a hard rock kid, but then also on the other side of that, like I said, I got guitar as my first instrument, and I'm sitting here learning like you know, Slayer and Metallica riffs and all this stuff that a kid learns at like, you know, 12, 13, 14. And on the other side of it, I have an acoustic guitar and I'm learning James Taylor and, you know, some of that Jim Croce and like those kind of things too. So it's like I had these two sides of me that are completely different, and to try to tie them all together was kind of a fun thing. And I think it almost met in the middle with what I'm doing. It's like, it's not quite, you know, this heavy side. It's not quite this super acoustic soft side. It's like, there's so much music in between that I'm trying to jump between. So it's been a lot of fun. Nice.
I would like a mixtape that's like Slayer
to James Taylor.
Like, that can you imagine that playlist? Like, exactly. Like Pantera.
I would kind of like Slayer covers of James Taylor songs.
Oh, or ooh, James Taylor covers of Slayer song.
Both of those. Yeah, what would be the better mix?
That's
there?
A fantastic idea. Oh my god.
I feel like I would prefer to hear James Taylor versions of Slayer songs.
Yeah.
Slayer's like a little intense for me. I don't know. I never got into anything like quite that heavy.
Yeah.
I was always just like, oh, this is too much. I'm too tired for this.
Yeah. I think a nice soft like Rain in Blood acoustic version would be really nice to hear. Yeah. Flamenco guitar even.
Oh yeah. Perfect like dentist office music.
Yeah, and then you realize like, wait, what am I listening to?
Yeah, you're like in turn, you're like, wait, what? Excuse me, I see your manager? What are we listening to? You like try and Shazam it, and it's like, I don't know what this
is. Shazam's like, bro, I don't know. Oh, man. Have you listened to Julian Lennon? I have to know then.
I, you know, I haven't dipped like too deep into it, but I've obviously heard it. And it's funny hearing the parallel between like all of their children's music and like just their voices when they talk too. It's like, I think it'd be real funny if they formed a group, like a super group of all the children. I'm sure they don't want to live in that world, you know, but I mean, that it's funny listening. Yeah. You're just like, you can kind of get lost in hearing even some of like Harrison's son. I forget his name. Is it Donnie?
Danny. Yeah.
Danny, hearing some of his, like his vocals too, and like his voice. I mean, yeah, it's funny just when he talks.
Eerily similar.
It's crazy. Yeah.
And like those early '80s Julian Lennon singles are like really catchy. Like they're really good. I can see why people were like, "Yes, please, I'll take more of that." You know, like it's really good.
Isn't he putting out a new record soon? Did I see that?
I think
that?
He might be. Yeah, he has like quietly been just putting out music for years. Like he just kind of does his thing.
Good for him. Yeah.
I think he's also a photographer, maybe. I'm not sure. But you know, as a songwriter, and you know, especially as someone who came to the Beatles late in the game, not that you're, you know, old, but like late, later in the game in terms of like your development. You know, you'd already been playing, and you had kind of like a formative foundation. You know, what are kind of the elements of the Beatles that you think really influence you, that really kind of stick to you?
I mean, I think kind of like you mentioned, the fact that you can be listening to one album and you're hearing how many genres from song to song. And even like within a song, they'll have like, you know, John's part and then this little bridge that Paul wrote that's in a completely different style. And, you know, vice versa, this like Paul sort of thing and John coming in with some dark vocals on top. I just, the way that it mixed together for them, it's just kind of like, it opened the eyes for me, my eyes even more, saying like, hey, this is possible to do anything you want, really. You don't have to like, you know, have this idea of like, this is my sound. It's just this one sort of thing. I love the idea of bouncing around different sounds and just whatever you're feeling in the moment. And that's really what trickled in for me. And a lot of the bass playing that Paul's like, he's influenced my bass playing a lot more probably than any of the other instrumentation of the band, like just from a musical standpoint, because I'll be just trying to listen to some of those bass lines, some of the Wings stuff too. Like you listen to some of the disco era of Wings too. I love some of those bass lines. They're just incredible.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of fun. I would say that musically has influenced me the most. And then their harmonies, the way that they're able to layer and stack. It's not like this sweet sounding harmonies of the Beach Boys with how like, I mean, then they were related, so it's like it almost blended better with them and like the Bee Gees, you know, the blend of those kind of artists.
Blood
but like
harmonies.
Blood harmonies. Yeah. I like that. And then
is that a real thing?
That's I've heard that phrase used for singers who are related, because there's like a genetic similarity, which is why the voices, you know, of the Beach Boys, of the Bee Gees, of the Robinson Brothers and the Black Crowes, or the Gallagher Brothers, when they sing together, when people that are related, you know, the Staple Singers, when people that are related sing together, there's just a difference to it. It's just
that makes sense.
It's just tighter in, you know, ways you can't quite quantify.
Sounds fucking metal though.
That's true. Yeah.
Blood harmonies.
Sounds like, you know, something Slayer would dip right into. Yeah.
Our new single, Blood Harmonies.
Blood Harmonies, yeah. I love that. But the way their vocals would just blend, yeah, it's like they're so unique singers, like with Ringo's voice and George, and the way they all blended was so unique that was really fun for me. Hearing the track Because for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the way that's like a three-part harmony that they tripled. I think they each tripled it, right? So it's just a stack of vocals, and just hearing that for the first time, like, remind you, this was at a time in my life where I'm becoming more of a producer, and like I'm being conscious of like what's actually happening behind, you know, the curtain there, and like the way that stack is built is just like, it was just so eye-opening for me. And a lot of my music is built upon harmonies, and as a one-man band, I mean, is that blood harmonies if I'm singing with myself?
Yes.
<I'm> layering that.
Well, that I think in some capacity, yeah, because it's why, you know, those harmonies sound so tight when one person does their own harmonies. You know, obviously there's differences when people that are not the same person, you know, just the timbre of the voice and the way that the body is built. But Yeah, I would say those are probably the bloodiest of harmonies.
The bloodiest. I try to be ultra bloody before I start recording. So,
you know, super bloody.
Just like ritualistic as I'm getting into it. No. But yeah, harmonies are a big thing for me too.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Well, man, I'm super excited for the rest of the record. When is that? Do you have a tentative target for it, or when you're going to put it out?
So I have, you know, it's funny. I'm actually heading to Europe in 3 days, and nice. I'm going for 2 months. Going. I've got a little tour planned out where I'm playing. We're going to 7 countries. I think I have. Was it? I'm playing across 4 or 5 of those countries. 7 shows lined up in about 4 or 5 of those countries. I'd have to double check, but we're kind of going just to explore and to get out there. I'm taking my Super 8 camera. As I mentioned, I like to shoot. So I'm going to try to shoot in all these countries, and we're hitting New York on the way home. So it's just going to be such a fun trip. And I'm releasing the next single September 22nd. That's coming out. It's a song called Burnout Baby. It's very soul. And like I said, I mean, a lot of the influences I mentioned before, but this is a lot more like slow and like Marvin Gaye mixed with the Bee Gees. Like if you mix those two together, what would that sound like? So it's kind of like a soul filled sort of a key and synth layered song. So that's coming out on the 22nd of September. And when I get back, I'm planning on putting out a release of my show is my first show in London. I think I'm trying to tape and get that recorded, at least audio. So I'm going to have a live vinyl of that. Nice. And then when I get back, so it's going to be 2024, I think, first, second quarter is when the rest of this album kind of drops. But I'm kind of just slowly dropping out some singles, and a lot of them are kind of changing as they go. I've got a lot recorded, but some songs are like jumping ahead of others based on like when I finish them. I'm like, actually, I want to kind of put this one out first. So it's kind of ever evolving, but look for 2024. I'll have this full album out, I believe.
Excellent, man. Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. Very exciting. Well, let's turn our attention, I guess, to the song of the week, shall we? Coming in at number 108 this week is I've Got a Feeling.
I've got a feeling deep inside, oh yeah. I can't hide, oh no, no, oh no, oh no, yes, yes, I've got a feeling, yes. Oh, please believe me, I'd hate to miss the train.
While the Beatles always credited songs to the Lennon-McCartney partnership, regardless of who was the composer of the song, the two of them had been writing mostly on their own pretty much since 1964, though they did often work together on songs the other brought in. But by 1969, the true collaborative days were mostly behind them. Of course, there were exceptions to this rule, especially with songs where the two of them were able to join together two completely unrelated pieces, like in the case of A Day in the Life or Baby, You're a Rich Man. Throughout 1968, John and Yoko filmed a series of short films entitled Film Number 1, Film Number 2, etc. Now, Film Number 5 was screened on Austrian national television in 1969 in March. It was filmed in December of 68 and featured John and Yoko singing a song idea John had been working on entitled Everybody Had a Hard Year. Now, at some point also December of 68, Paul met up with John, presumably to present some song ideas to each other, and it was during this time that they sandwiched together Everybody Had a Hard Year with an idea Paul had, I've Got a Feeling. When the Beatles met up January 2nd of 1969 to start work on the Get Back, Let It Be project, one of the first things they started working on with the band was I've Got a Feeling, which, as evidenced on the recordings, it was by all accounts pretty well arranged when they started. The band rehearsed this song countless times over the course of these well-documented sessions until George left, and then brought it back to the fold once he returned. But the song didn't really take flight until January 22nd, the day Billy Preston arrives. It's the first song he sits in on with the band, and his addition immediately sets the tone for the remainder of the project. The song was eventually recorded on the Apple rooftop January 30th, with the band performing the song twice during their lunchtime concert, with take one eventually being settled on for inclusion on the Let It Be album. The song was released on the Let It Be album in May 1970, and obviously was not performed by the band live after its very live recording, because they broke up when the record came out. Paul added it to his solo set in 2004, where it stayed for years, off and on, and famously in his 2022 tour was augmented by the addition of an isolated John Lennon vocal added thanks to the magic of Peter Jackson's team being able to isolate the audio from the live rooftop performance, bringing Paul and John together live again on stage after all these years. So, why do I have I've Got a Feeling at 108? Now, I feel like I'm at a point in this podcast where I'm just going to get yelled at every episode for whatever I have ranked here. So that's kind of just where we're at with that. But first and foremost, I will say this is just a killer track. It's so good to hear the Beatles live in human form and just absolutely rocking. Paul's vocal on here is killer. It's always great to get to hear him kind of dip into that little Richard scream that he does. And he does it here with real vigor. He's just going for it. You can really sense in this performance how much he's absolutely loving playing live with the band. He just sounds like whatever feeling he is, he's got a feeling. And that's something just really, you know, there's a palpable feeling that he's putting down on tape on this track. I love John's harmonies throughout. He and Paul are always really in sync. And his bridge in the vocal is really, really cool. It's surprisingly smooth. It's almost buttery. It feels confident. It feels cool. And this is kind of surprising considering the lyrics he's singing from stem from a song about how bad of a year he just had. If you listen to the recordings of him singing Everybody's Had a Hard Year when it was still that little seed, it sounds like he's really been through hell. You know, in 1968, he's been through a divorce. He's been through the death of his manager and kind of de facto father figure in Brian Epstein. He's gotten addicted to heroin. He's gotten arrested. His band isn't getting along. But for this brief moment, in January, on the rooftop of Apple Records, he sounds like he's been through the shit, but is thriving, if only for a moment. Billy Preston, though, I think is the real MVP here. The add and the parts that he add to this track really give some real weight to the proceedings here. That little rolling piano lick he plays is basically the hook of the song. George manages to sneak in some great moments here as well, doubling the piano hook with some real cool, like kind of stabby guitar licks in the bridge and delivering that killer guitar bend coming out of the bridge. Ringo, of course, rock solid, moving just enough where he needs to, playing with real energy but never overstepping. Now, as much as I'd say I love this track, though, it loses some points in the rankings to me because it's kind of just that. It's the track that works, not necessarily the song. The verses of the song are pretty much filler for a rock and roll song. They don't really mean anything. It's just, I've got a feeling deep inside, a feeling I can't hide. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sure. So it's just there to kind of fill the space. And that's okay. You know, like the track is good enough to let you know what kind of feeling that he's having, I guess. But lyrically, it's fairly empty for the most part. And it's a shame because Paul's writing really great lyrics around this time. So maybe that's kind of a silly gripe, but that's kind of where it loses a lot of steam. It just says nothing for the most part. But at the end of the day, it's I've Got a Feeling. It absolutely rocks. It's a killer track. I always enjoy it. I'd be more than happy to be able to write like one track with filler lyric like this and cover that filler lyric with a track that's this cool. So that's my opinion on it. Julian, I throw the ball to you, my friend. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you touched on a lot of great points. I took some notes actually beforehand. I was listening and I kind of wanted to like just refresh on it a little bit. And yeah, I mean, you really touched on Billy shining here. I mean, this is like, that's something that came back to me too. Like, oh yeah, just like, especially on, you can go back. I listened to like the Naked version where they kind of like pumped him up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
His keys are just, yeah, incredible. I love when they added him in. I mean, you can see in the Let It Be, or is it Get Back, right?
Yeah.
The documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Get Back. And that was just, you see like how much they're going through at that time. And when Billy kind of came in, it, like everybody sort of like set their gripes aside and were like, hey, we're happy to have someone else here. I think, you know, like that energy. And I feel like you can really feel that on this song. And like, that's kind of what you're saying. It's like, it really shines as a performance and as like this band coming together and just really getting through some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like, at least in this moment, they're getting through it. They're having a good time. You watch the video, they're just having such a blast on the roof. And that's what I get out of the song more than the track itself. Like you mentioned, it's like, as a song, you know, I don't really know what it does for me, but just from that performative standpoint, that's where it really gets its boost. And also the fact that I, you know, briefly touched on this before, but getting to see Paul live for that 2022 tour and seeing this technology, I had no idea this was coming.
Yeah.
So that was really incredible seeing,
nice.
Like,
oh man,
they start playing it and you're just kind of like, okay, yeah, it's like, this is the, you know, the Get Back documentary. And like, he played a couple tracks from that album. And when that one came on, you're just like, okay, yeah, I'm ready to kind of get into this. And then when the big screen comes on and he just like turns around and he's facing John while he's singing that lead, you're just, everyone's losing their mind. And you get the sense in that moment too that he is so elated to be doing that. It's not a gimmick for him. I mean, he really was like, this is amazing that I can kind of play with John again. I mean, that's how the sense you get from that is like, it really felt special to him. So it was a really cool moment seeing that, and I think that alone elevated the song for me a lot more, just getting to be part of that moment. And that moment for him, it was just a really cool thing. Actually, a funny quick story about that tour and that show. We live in Denver, and we flew to Boston just for that show. We made a trip out of it.
Nice.
So like my girlfriend Veronica has some family out there, and we kind of we went out there, made a trip out of it for the show. And when we're there, we had pretty decent, you know, seats. We were on the floor, but kind of a little bit further back. And we were like there a little bit early. It was super hot. I mean, just like, it's middle of June in Boston. It was like actually like sun coming down. We're like, let's go inside. Like, it's just such a stressful day. Let's go inside and just like eat something. We were just trying to get away from everything. It was just a lot going on leading up to that moment. So we go inside. We just get like some crappy ballpark pizza, you know, whatever, just something to get away from everything. And we're standing in this like dingy corner. We're all decked out in our like vintage clothes. We're all dressed up. I mean, that's what I love to wear anyway. So we pull from that style, and we're just standing in the corner. Some guy comes up to us and he's like, hey, I'm with the tour. We just wanted to talk to you guys and have see what's up. And you get cool, answered a few questions. And we're just like, oh yeah, really confused, but okay. And this guy's talking to us, and he's just like, where are you guys from? And asking us a little bit about ourselves and like what Paul means to us. I think it's like for some interview or something at the time. I was like, I don't know what's exactly going on. But he's like, okay, so where are you guys sitting? I'm like, oh, yeah, we're right here on the floor, you know, not like a little bit far back. But I think it's still going to be a great show, of course. And he's like, well, how would you guys like to sit in the front?
Shut up. And,
yes. I broke down, honestly. I was just like, this is insane. I just didn't know what to say. He gave us tickets and we get moved to like the front row. I mean,
wow.
We're sitting up there at the Fenway Park. You could see a little video actually on my social media that I captured where I was just like showing the stage, and then I turn around and there's like, you know, 30,000 plus behind me. I'm just like, I don't know. I can't believe what's happening in this moment. And actually we got the ticket stubs framed. I'll send you a photo of them.
Yeah.
Later. We got the stubs framed in like the poster, the tour poster and everything. So that was such a crazy moment for me. And my girlfriend's she's not a musician, but she's very well versed on music history, and she's into jazz and all kinds of genres all the way up to electronic. I mean, she loves everything. So Paul, of course, is one of her biggest musical loves as well. So, I mean, just for both of us, this was such a crazy experience, and it really tied in. I was happy when this song became an option to talk about, because it's like, you know what, actually this is actually a really cool moment in my life and will always be. So this song kind of plays into that a little bit, this whole album and this, just this time period. So yeah, back to the song though, I mean, like, yeah, sorry, a little tangent there.
No, that's great.
No, I love that story. That's it's fantastic. So great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, having fun. But like I mentioned, you guys really touched on a lot of the points. I think the only thing for me is just like the way the two songs came together at the end, you know, like you've got like John's main vocal and Paul's main vocal, and the way they're kind of like singing at the same time at the end has always been so cool to me, like how they line up.
Yeah.
And just that was something that always, that's a special part of the song too, is the way the two ideas really like intertwine and come together. So that was always a fun moment.
Yeah. I think that's probably one of the, I think that's one of like, that's where the track really takes off there at the end. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I'm going to hold my thought and let you go first, Julia.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
That's fine.
Sorry.
I'm just hanging out over here waiting.
Chilling out, looking adorable.
I love how Billy Preston shows up and it's like, everybody act right.
Shut up, Billy's here.
Don't embarrass me in front of Billy.
He's really good. Like, stop it. Look how cool he looks.
He does look very cool.
He looks very cool.
Guys, Billy brought the good drugs. Don't fuck this up.
He probably did.
Right?
The good vibes and the good drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was very funny to me. I love that. I'm really with you on this. Like, it's... and the fact that they took the first performance, like track one, mm-hmm. like recording one, whatever you called it. I don't know. What did you
take
call it?
One,
take
yeah.
one. Thank, that's the word
version
I'm looking
one,
for.
I don't know.
Take one. Yeah. I was like, recording one.
This is a
that
master
is the one that,
recording.
Is that the one they ended up using? It's like the
yeah.
first take, right?
Yeah, okay. They played it. Yeah. I think they did like two versions of Get Back, I think. Then they did I've Got a Feeling. Then did a couple more things. And then did I've Got a Feeling again. Because they ran through just about everything on the rooftop. I think at least twice, just to make sure they had options and everybody was happy with all the takes.
Sure. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that really proves that it is just like a performance song and not a, I don't know, like artistic song or, you know, like, I'm not really sure what the word I'm looking for is, but it's the performance. Like, they captured that like lightning in a bottle kind of thing. Like, you just, the it's a feel, like it's vibes. It's vibes.
It's vibes.
The whole thing
it's
is
a feeling.
Vibes. Yeah, it's a feeling. Yeah, sorry, that was real
it
basic.
It is a feeling.
No, I'm with you. That's so. It's true though. Yeah, it really is the performance. Like, it's so raw. Like,
yes.
That was another thing that came back listening to. I was like, oh yeah, I forget how raw this is. And like, there's mistakes. I mean, technically, if you want to get, you know, I'm sure they would view it as mistakes of like, oh, I wish I did this better. But you listen to it, and it's this perfect culmination of like the song was clearly still kind of fresh, at least the way they were playing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I love how it came together on that.
Yeah, it wasn't like one of their sort of like studio crafted, you know, hours upon hours upon hours, like trying different things and whatever. You know, not that they really did that a whole lot anyway. I feel like most of the songs we've talked about so far, well, no, some of them, there have been like quite a few, like on the 23rd take.
Yeah, sure.
They finally felt like it was maybe good enough and they just went with it.
Right.
Okay. But yeah, this one, they were just like, yeah, no, that sounds like it rocks, and let's go with it. I like it.
And it's really, it's one of two kind of rocking moments on that record, the other being probably the one after 909, where like, and again, that's on the rooftop, and they're just kind of, they're just going for it, you know, and the songs don't have a ton of weight. They're just there to rock, you know, and that's fun. I like that about that.
Yeah, it's okay. You don't have to be, not everything has to be Get Strawberry
Back,
Fields.
Same thing.
Like, it's, you know, they contain multitudes.
Yes. I think this is a song that, like, I was thinking back to when I was doing the ranking, and this one I felt like kept dropping down for me because I genuinely love the performance of it, like, because it rocks. Like, it's killer like that. I love playing this song. I love singing this song. This is one of my favorite tracks to do with the Walrus. But when I'm like, what does the song hold any water as a song? No. And it kept going, well, the performance doesn't save it enough to keep it above this song. Does it, you know, do the same thing with this one? And I felt like dropping down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I kind of think it ended up where it has.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're allowed to have a ranking.
Thank you.
How was that process like for you? I'm sure you've mentioned this on another podcast, but just like going through their entire discography and like ranking. I mean, what was that like?
Well, I was drunk for a part of it. It was during the pandemic. I mean, it was during, you know, lockdown. It was, you know, it started off very gut based. Mm-hmm. Like I knew my top five pretty well. I knew my bottom three pretty well. And from there, it was just kind of like gut check. And then it was just kind of going back and like A-B-ing the songs and going like, do I like this more than this? Like, how does this weigh in my head to this? And just kind of shuffling the deck from there. And that's kind of how this, I think, moved down. This probably started out maybe in the 50s in my first draft. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And so it would get bumped. But then at the same time, like I have a hard, like a real soft spot for like some of their early like B-side screaming rock tunes. Like I love Bad Boy. I love Long Tall Sally. And the performances in those, I think, are energetic enough to push them higher up in the rankings. So like some of those, we haven't even gotten to yet. And I think even though it's not an original song and they're doing covers, in some of those cases, you know, it's songs that they have such affection for and such admiration for the songs and for the artists that those covers just tend to be really passionate and really, really kind of, you know, ballsy and have just such a great energy to it. That it supersedes the fact that it, you know, might just be, you know, Bad Boy, which is not the greatest song in the world, but their cover of it rules. So, yeah.
Okay. No, fair enough. Yeah. Especially with the energy that they come with, like a lot of those early ones, it's like, they're almost just trying to rekindle some of that, I think, with some of this like later stuff and like trying to get, I mean, they never lost it, but you know, I know what you're talking about. Like just that fire they had early on and the energy, and they're just, you know, they've always been goofballs. So it's like, fun to hear them doing that.
It's like harnessing your like inner 15-year-old garage band, you know, like, like trying to learn, you know, Green Day riffs in the basement when you're 15, you know? That's kind of where I've landed on that. But yeah, so you got any other thoughts on this one, hon?
Nah.
No?
I'm good.
You good?
Yep.
All right.
I said what I need to say.
So at 108 out of 223, does that seem too high or too low? Or if you were going to rank these, Julian, would this be in the ballpark there for you, or would it be higher or lower? Now, you've got a great association with it, though, so that's tough.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's probably jumped for me just with some of these experiences that have, like, that I've been able to be a part of, and just, like, it has changed for me. But so it might actually, you know, it might have swapped with you. It might go up towards the 50 range just because of that. But I'm with you, though. I think overall, like, there's a lot of fair points. It's got a lot of strength in the performative side, but, you know, as a song and lyrical content, you know, I think it is pretty fair where it is. That's such a hard thing to say too, of like all these songs. And hey, it's like you said, it's pretty impressive that this is their, you know, 108th best song, right? You know what I mean?
yeah, I would pay for this to be my 8th best song.
So
it's, you got a lot to pick from there. I don't envy your task of doing that, but I'm sure that's a lot of fun kind of going through and figuring all that out.
Mm-hmm. For sure. What are you thinking?
I'm good with it.
You're good with 108?
Yeah, I feel pretty solid about it. I'm not going to debate you on this. I pretty much agree with your statements on it. So
I do think, you know, this song in my head, like in an alternate timeline, because, you know, there was the talk of, you know, John wanted Billy Preston to join the band. He wanted him to be a full-time Beatle, like, let's be a five-piece, John, Paul, George, Ringo, and Billy. I think George was kind of into it. Ringo was up for whatever the group consensus was, and Paul was not a fan of the idea. But I feel like if he had joined the band, this would be, like, the blueprint for where they could have gone, because it's, like, it's got those, it's kind of funky. It's got some gospel-y vibes to it with the way he plays. Mm-hmm. The song itself is a little bit more groovy than what they normally do. Like, it maybe grooves in a way that like you don't really get aside from like a Come Together, something like that. I feel like this.
Well, imagine too, like what Billy could have added vocally if they got to that point with a lot. Think of the soul and like all those elements. I just picture a song with him fronting it, and then you've got the other guys harmonizing. I mean, that would have been quite a mix.
Like he could have sang the hell out of this. Like,
yeah, honestly.
Honestly, he might have. Now, there might be a cover of that.
Yeah, right.
They would never let him do lead vocals.
Probably not.
I'm like,
yeah,
well,
that's the thing.
Well, they let Ringo do lead vocal. They might have let Billy do a lead vocal.
I don't know.
Saying a couple albums in, you know, like, hey, why don't you throw in a track, Billy?
And once he comes in with, like, hey, guys, I just wrote this song called Nothing From Nothing. You're okay, that's actually a jam. Let's do that, you know.
Oh, man. Picture them in the background singing on that one. I mean, that would have just been,
right?
Let your imagination run wild on that.
It'd be killer.
Well, it's really cool what ended up with Billy and George on tours. Like, George on his solo tours, Billy would be there. Like, I actually, another quick tangent, I went to an estate sale here in Denver, and I found, this was like maybe 2 years ago in the pandemic again, just like as going through different things, and I found this guy had like a carousel of old little like stills, and it's like the actual like raw film itself. I don't know the exact like format, but I was starting to like pick them up and kind of look at them and like, what is this? And a lot of it was just like random people in random houses. I have no idea. And I started seeing like some live concert stills. I'm like, what is this? Like, and this guy, I guess, was a photographer, and he had some stills of George Harrison in 74. And you can see Billy Preston on the side of the stage playing. And I'm like, I just have these now. I'm like, this is incredible.
Dude, so that's you ought to reach out to the who handles the Harrison stuff now. I don't know. I think BMG or somebody. But like they probably would be interested in licensing those at some point from you. Like that's really cool. Or outright, you know, like, hey, we'll throw you a box set or something.
No doubt. Yeah.
We'll give you a free t-shirt, man.
We'll send you the box set that came in the wood box.
Yeah, the $1,000 All Things Must Pass box set.
Send us those, send us those, the film.
Yeah.
And we'll send you this box set.
Well, because there's never been an official release of that 74 tour. And that's always been kind of like a hot discussion of like, are they ever going to release it? Because like, there are professional recordings and video of it. But, like, George's voice wasn't in the best of conditions, and, like, I think there's a little bit of protection of that legacy there.
True.
But, you know, inevitably that kind of stuff would come out, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite periods. Those pictures. Yeah, no, you're probably right. I'm going to hold on to those. No, yeah. I'm definitely see. No, that's super cool, though, but you're right. Yeah, I'm sure that does play into it with the never releasing it, but that's one of my favorite periods of his like solo career, just like that whole Dark Horse era, and you know, super cool tie-in with Billy, though. That's all I was trying to get at.
For sure. Absolutely. Now I'm thinking about like how it would sound if the Beatles were doing like Will It Go Round in Circles with Billy Preston, like, oh man.
Yeah, right.
With Paul doing like a silly love songs kind of bass line. Oh, it'd be damn. They blew it. The Beatles blew it. Oh man. Well, before we wrap up, do you have time for some rapid fire questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's awesome. This is how we like to end it. So there's no wrong answers here. The rapid fire questions are almost never rapid answers. So don't feel obliged to be like, you know, real quick on it. Whatever you got.
Okay.
Your favorite Beatles song, and it can be of all time or it can just be today. Whatever floats your boat.
Okay, just one that peeks in is like, oh, this was my favorite for no reason is, well, not for no reason, but I'd say Fool on the Hill. That one kind of comes in.
Interesting, okay.
That's a great one for me.
Yeah, that's
I think some of his best lyrics, too, honestly, if we want to talk about lyrics. Yeah.
Nice. That's an underappreciated one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do love that song.
I always think of when our nephew was taking band class when he was in, like, I don't know, fourth grade, and they gave him a recorder. I'm like, well, now we're going to learn how to play Fool on the Hill, pal. And it was terrible.
Best song to feature a recorder?
That's the solo. Yeah, that's the best one. Yeah. Your least favorite Beatles song. Do you have a least favorite?
You know what? The meaning and the lyrics, I get it. It was kind of being funny, but I really dislike Piggies. It doesn't do a lot for me. George being cheeky, but it's just kind of, you know, I don't know. That one loses it for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Favorite Beatles album?
Oof. And You know, it's really tough. I mean, I'd have to go the White Album just because of where they were individually. And like, it was just fun to see like how much was going on with that record genre wise. And that ties in for me as an artist and as a, you know, singer songwriter, just to be able to pull from different sounds. And that record really epitomizes that.
Yeah, for sure. Who's your favorite Beatle?
Paul.
Your Paul guy?
I'm a Paul guy.
Nice, nice.
I think so, yeah. I mean, there's no least favorite Beatle, if that's right. The next question. No.
Who would you off if you had the chance? Just kidding. Don't answer that.
Jesus.
I was just kidding.
We had enough with these guys. The last question is your favorite memory associated with a Beatles song. I feel like you might have answered it already, though.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
I mean, well, you know what? It would be probably just getting to see him live and like have that come together. And I keep tying that in, that, no pun intended. Right. But seeing that was a really cool culmination for me. But also hearing Because for the first time, as I maybe recalled before, that really blew my mind more than hearing any other song of theirs for the first time.
Yeah.
And let's say there maybe were some psychedelics involved, but yeah. You know, hearing that one for the first time, you're just kind of like, I was really speechless, just like sitting there. And yeah, and that one for me, probably my favorite. You know what? That I might go back and change my answer. That Because might be my favorite Beatles song of all time.
Nice.
For that reason.
Okay. No, right. No, like I said, no wrong answers. Yeah. I love it.
That's a life changing moment.
Yeah.
I love it.
Perfect.
Yeah,
man.
It was.
Perfect. Well, Julian, man, this has been a whole lot of fun. Where can everybody check out your music, your tour dates, where you're going to be, all your socials? Plug away, whatever you got.
I appreciate it. Like I said, I've got some new music coming out over the course of the next few months. I'm going to be in Europe for the next 2 months, so follow me. I'm everywhere at Julian Fulco Perrone. Just try your best to spell it, and you'll find me. I'm the only one, so, you know, however you get there, you'll get there. But, I'll be kind of keeping everybody updated on my ventures in Europe. I'll be in London, actually, speaking of the rooftop performance, in 4 days. And we're definitely going to go by and sightsee and, Abbey Road Studios and all that stuff. It's just going to be – it's kind of cool timing doing this now and then about to head out. So
yeah.
It's going to be fun. So, yeah, at Julian Fulco Perrone. JulianFulcoPerrone.com, all that, pretty much everywhere you can find and you can listen.
Sweet. Are you getting to do like an actual studio tour at Abbey Road?
I don't have anything booked, but yeah. I was trying to kind of figure out how to do that. I just don't know if they're having anything during the time I'm there.
Yeah.
It might actually be like closed off.
Like they do a thing every year or 2 years where it's like, you know, they'll kind of open up for the, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays of like kind of like a showcase thing. But I think it might have just happened. But
yeah, you know, that's what we were seeing.
Just being outside
looked,
the gate is rad. Mm-hmm. Like we did that.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure.
Yeah.
Make sure
you
have a marker to like write your name on the wall.
Yeah, bring a marker. You can sign your name on the wall.
Yeah.
Take a picture.
We're going to Liverpool next. So lots of sightseeing between the two cities. And like, I mean, it's going to be too much to see. I'm excited, though.
Nice. Oh, man, you're going to have a blast. It's killer over there.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it.
Wonderful. Well, Julian, thanks so much, man. This has been a whole lot of fun. Really appreciate it. Everybody check out his new stuff. And, yeah, man, this has been a blast. We have 107 more songs. So if you want to come back on for another one, we could definitely make that happen.
Anytime. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That would be great.
Killer. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Talk to you soon. How about it, friends? Julian Fulco Perrone. A good time there, man. These songs are groovy, man. They're catchy as hell.
Yeah.
And, like, that's a pretty rad story of going to a McCartney show and, like, getting the sweet treatment.
Yeah, isn't that like a, like, doesn't Billy Joel do that?
Yeah, he doesn't sell the first two rows of the show,
right?
And they go and they pull people from like the nosebleeds.
That's
and bring
cool.
them down to the front.
I love
so
that.
If we go see Billy Joel next year, I think we should buy nosebleeds.
It's probably all we can afford,
right?
This podcast is not raking in the dough.
But you know what, we do have nice people that buy us coffees on this podcast.
It's
and we appreciate
true.
That
we appreciate you
friends. So friends, what do y'all think about I've Got a Feeling at 108? I feel like I'm gonna catch some flack on this one. Let us know what you think about I've Got a Feeling at number 108. If you're looking to yell at me on Facebook, you can do it at
Ranking the Beatles.
If you want to chastise me on Twitter, you can do it over at
Ranking Beatles.
That's right. And if you wish to leave a snarky comment or DM on Instagram, you're more than welcome to do it by looking us up at
Ranking the Beatles.
That's right. Let us know what you think, how wrong I am, how right I am, whatever you think. Tell your friends about us. Be sure to check out rankingthebeatles.com and grab yourself some RTB swag. You get a poster and rank your own Beatles.
You get a sweatshirt for the chilly days ahead.
It's coming.
It's coming.
It's PSL season. Pumpkin spice lattes. grab yourself a jumper to keep warm.
Ooh, a jumper.
In this
yes.
upcoming brisk season. Yeah, and leave a review, a 5-star or 4-star, whatever the max stars you can leave review would be swell. We love reviews. So that's all we got for this week, friends. Hope you've all enjoyed it. It's been an absolute blast. We'll see you next week with a brand new episode. Until then, I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Julia.
This has been Ranking the Beatles. Adios.
Bye, y'all.